based on individual circumstances. Exceptions may be granted if the supervisor or deputy director determines there is no alternative to addressing a recipient's need for vocational training necessary to achieve the employment outcome on the recipient's approved individualized plan for employment. So that gets the millionaire's daughter who the parents don't want to pay a dime for education. She's motivated to go to college and have a goal and get employed, and so we would make an exception.
So this would be a lot different than what happens now.
Yes.
Because when you go into they figure out how you're going to pay for it. They don't.
Right.
You know, whereas now you're just saying that there's a Pell Grant fine, everything else we pay for.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so when they go in, they basically come up with, the formula based on parents' income, kids' assets, and say, well, you know, the cost is going to be $10,000, and here's what we'll do. $2,000 in a grant or a couple thousand, just go down the list. And then the remaining, they expect the parents to come up with. There's grants, and then everything else gets into subsidized interest, work study. I mean, it's not a pure handout. I mean, there's...
Right.
And so do we want to, I guess the big step now is, do we want to start bringing in some of, to what extent do we want to bring those other things in to, loans and work study and those kinds of things into the requirement that students take care of themselves, whereas the agency picks up the rest? So is this the time when, it gets back to the financial participation, I guess, they intermingle. Do we want to... How far do we want to go down that path? I mean, one thing is they go in and see if there's any other scholarships available. Are we going to just have them go through the financial aid thing to see if they can come up with any more grants? Or are we only interested in grants outright, and then everything that they would have to either pay, borrow, or work, that's what we would pay for?
Can I... I think we are obligated to take advantage of comparable benefits if there are comparable benefits. But some of the things you're mentioning are not comparable benefits. Like a student loan is not a comparable benefit.
So just a grant then essentially is the only comparable benefit.
A Pell Grant would be considered that way.
Or any kind of scholarship or grant or anything that doesn't have to be paid back.
No scholarships based on merit. Those are not.
Yeah, that's another one that's not. And I'm not so sure that work study, although I think that's an excellent thing for people to do. I work my way through school, and I don't regret that. I'm not sure that's a comparable benefit, though.
I think those things that were mentioned, the LEAP and the SAP and the this and that, things are what are really comparable benefits. And part of the reason I think we should go this direction is that We don't even know those things, we encourage people to go apply for like the merit-based scholarships that we know about, but we don't encourage all these other things because we don't even know they're there. That's not our expertise, now maybe an option would be that we would require everybody that wants to have us involved with their vocational training to go through that financial aid office, but maybe not just limit us on the, that then we, what Voc Rehab does is, whatever the school says is the amount of unmet need, that is what they pay. If it's $50 or $7,000, if it's $50, they don't pay more than $50. And so maybe our language needs to be more, we look at their unmet need. We have them go through that process so that we will have a benchmark for our counselors to go from.
Do the feds make us pay for when somebody's eligible for service, make them pay for everything?
What? Say that again.
Is there part of the federal rules that the way that we get money and have to distribute money, that if they qualify for services from the commission and they go to college, that we have to pay everything?
No.
I think it's individualized, you know. Not everybody's going to need assistive technology. Not everybody's going to need readers, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know,
but if they need it, I mean, if they need it, do we have to pay for it?
Yeah.
We are obligated to,
yes, right.
Carl, we are obligated to authorize for services and goods, equipment, that is necessary to attain the vocational goal.
So if they went through this financial aid and we paid everything else, but we said, we think work study is a great deal, I mean, and you ought to do that, that's your, we couldn't do that?
Are you meaning deny services if they don't do it? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, that's part of your college, participation. I mean, you do the work study and then...
But it needs to be individualized, you know, like...
Yeah.
Well, sure, there'd have to be some exceptions. But could we, as a rule, separate from exceptions, require that?
Require that they do an internship, sort of?
Well, work study. I mean, it's part of their financial participation.
But right now, there's no financial participation.
Yeah, we didn't agree to do financial participation.
Well, I'm just asking, is it possible? I mean, can we even do that? I mean, because of the regulations. And then if we did want to do it, then that'd be the next question. What would be all required?
Yeah, that's kind of the question that, unfortunately, we don't have the answer yet. About whether without doing financial participation for everything. Well, no, I know that you can do it for you can implement financial participations on just components of your program. I know you can do that. But if you put it in on certain components of your program, like if we did it just for vocational training, does that mean we have to require it of everybody? Well, and also there's a distinction between, like, if the commission required financial participation, that means we would have that tool that we all worked on for so long and looked at, and counselors would interview each client for that financial information, as opposed to what we're proposing here is just on this piece, the vocational training, we send the people to the financial aid officer. So we actually don't implement a financial participation requirement or, you know, tool at all.
Right.
We require them to go do this piece, but not, and I see that as separate.
Mm-hmm. I guess it comes to mind, because work study is not given out to everybody. It's based on need. If you got a very affluent kid from a fluent family, he's not going to get any work study, and so that's even as an option, and so that kind of blows the... I guess I was just seeing if there was a way to get the work study.
You still want that financial participation, don't you?
Well, I like the work study. I mean, I think it's a good opportunity for the kid, and it's not really going to make it a burden on them or hardship, but it's just a great opportunity to get them some work experience when they're in college.
And usually the hours aren't that many a week.
Right.
Yeah. Five, maybe.
I think that's something that we could do within policy, that counselors would really encourage and work with their students to, if work study is at all an option, to really work with them to make it happen and encourage that.
And the work study comes out of their going through the aid application. Because that's the end product when it's the list of things that's available to the student. The work study is one of those components.
Mm-hmm.
Although, would a university put that on a blind person's? Would the expectations there be such that would come out on
it? Might be. It might not be yet. It might be a process of educating over time too.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, maybe I missed something. It said the deputy director would determine, if they're eligible for our services, say if they come from a family of millionaires and the parents say, no, I'm not going to put them through school, we're not going to deny them services because their parents are millionaires.
No, we certainly would not deny services at all. What I'm talking about is, would we pay their tuition? And absolutely, we would provide the training, the counseling, the whatever they need related to their plan. But when it came right down to the tuition, according to the financial aid office, that person would be said, there is no unmet need. Yes. And so, the parents, the school doesn't care if the parents refuse. The school would, you know, you work that out. We, however, would sit down with that counselor and say, okay, the school says no need. And the client says, my parents don't believe I should go to school. They don't believe I'll ever get a job. And I'll inherit money, so I don't need a job. And they don't believe I can work. That person, we might try to work with the family and educate them. Right. But we also, I think, almost certainly would say, fine, here's your tuition.
See, I would like that be in rule because I know there's agency staff that believe if they got millionaire parents, no way should we help them.
Well, that's why it goes up to the deputy director. Because so that staff, you know, as consistent as you can try to be across the board, you're going to have differences.
Sure.
And so if it goes to one higher level person, then it's hopefully more consistent, and also the onus of any mistakes is on that person and not a counselor level person.
See, I was looking at down the road 25, 30 years, and none of us might be working then.
Right.
And who's going to be making those decisions?
And that's the deputy director one.
Yeah, but you may not be there in 30 years. I might have another deputy director who...
Well, the deputy director would be Carlos, but you're right, that'll change over time. You know, the people will be different, but at least that's one person at any given time deciding statewide as opposed to 30 counselors each making their own determination.
Mm-hmm. And see, I'm saying if it's in writing, then it won't change unless the board of commissioners.
Oh, okay. You mean make the exception more specific.
Right.
Yeah. Then you, with every, if you get too specific, there's always the scenario just next to it that's left out.
Sure.
And, I mean,
it's... To try and write a rule would be, you take 5 pages to write, you'd just too...
And even then, you might not anticipate every situation.
That's why you just leave it to the discretion, I think, is the kind of the safety valve.
But it does say, I mean, what was the wording on it? To make reasonable exceptions to the program financial participation provisions in this section based on individual circumstances. Exceptions may be granted if the person determines there is no alternative to addressing a recipient's need for vocational training necessary to achieve the employment outcome. So that actually is some pretty specific language. It's if they determine, then yes, that depends on the person. But what they determine is there's no alternative to addressing the need. Okay. They can't just determine, I really like this person, you know, or something like that.
Now, when it talks about the reader amounts, it talks about per semester or quarter. And it seems to me like there's always been quite a bit of confusion about, you know, about how the reader provision thing works. And I'm wondering if, you know, saying per semester or quarter, if somebody's in a program that has quarters and somebody else is in one that has semesters, does that mean that the person who's in the quarter situation could end up with twice as much reader assistance as somebody who's in a semester program? Just because of the kind of program they happen to be in, or?
Yeah, I see your point.
Excuse me, this is unrelated to anything, but I guess there's never been a precedent. I was going to step out for 1 second and make a quick call so my ride doesn't come down. So I was just going to step out. So I couldn't remember. No one's ever stepped out of a meeting before, so.
We'll make that exception.
I got to
lock the door when you get out, though, but that's fine.
Of course, we'll lock the door at once.
Well, that could work, too.
That's so risky. Actually, he probably prefer that.
I tried to get back in, but the door was locked. So.
Okay. That's a good question, Barbara. I think what we were looking at is that there'd be about the same amount of hours, but maybe that isn't true. Carlos, do you want to reflect on that?
Yeah, I think we didn't fix that. What we changed was the, instead of the amount of dollars, amount of hours, but we didn't consider the difference between the number of hours, semesters and quarters. So I think that's something that we need to somehow include in there.
And I also have a comment here too. You know, basically, when we set a dollar amount, and actually I thought we were going to get that out of rule.
We did get the dollar amount.
Yeah, there isn't a dollar amount. There is an hour amount, and it's dollar per semester or quarter.
Right, yeah. And I think what Barbara is saying that is that in a quarter, you take maybe less classes, and you're still getting more reader time than in a semester.
How many academic hours does someone usually take during a quarter? Robert or Carlos, do you know the answer to that?
I do.
Okay.
12.
Dorothy?
Well, it's a minimum of 12, most of them.
In a quarter?
No, in a quarter.
Yeah, that's only three classes.
Okay, but isn't that true in a...
Nine.
That's in a semester.
Yes, semester
the minimum
is 12.
At, anyway, in graduate school. But when I went to Briar Cliff, we had trimester, three, and then summer school, and it was 10 was a full load. And I think a minimum was 6 or 7 hours in a trimester, and which would be like a quarter if you counted
right.
Summer school.
But that's really pretty close to what a semester is.
Mm-hmm. A semester is like 15 hours and...
No, 12 is full of in a semester.
Yeah,
school. Generally. See, my thing, I don't really know about quarters. I know about semester systems, but I don't know if full load for a quarter is half of what it is for a semester. I thought they were comparable.
They are.
At the end of the year, it ends up with the same amount of hours for the year.
But do you take four, 12 hours is a full load for a semester. So...
And it's a full load for a quarter.
12 hours? You would take 12 hours in a quarter?
That's what Metro Tech considers full-time, it's a full hour in every institution.
Okay,
and
so...
that's what it is, it's Southeast too.
So that would be the same amount of...
Mm-hmm. Same amount of classes, yeah. Same amount of comparable reading.
Well, I know it's been eons since I...
actually fewer classes at Metro, because they're like about 4.5 credit hours per class.
Oh, okay, so that's how it... So I don't know, does that end up being an inequity? Or does
I do have another thought too. I think when we set like a dollar amount, which in policy or an hour type of thing, I think what we're doing is what we're talking about is best practice because it seldom really goes over that. Most of the time, a person's need is met within the parameters that we set. And so when we say like $300 a semester. That's really kind of an arbitrary point beyond which you might be looking at a counseling situation. If a person is actually using readers in excess of that, unless they're in a particular program that requires that, and there are programs like that. But there are people who believe that their need for readers is really excessive, and that needs to be addressed. And so I think, that's just a sort of a tool, at least that's the way I regarded it. Most of, by far and away, most of my clients, the clients that I worked with, really did not use all of the reader time that they were entitled to. Robert, did you say that's true?
That is true. That's true.
So does that satisfy Barbara, or do you?
But doesn't,
kind of work itself out. I can remember when I went to undergraduate school, the school hired work-study students to do my reading for me. So the commission didn't pay anything in undergraduate school. But then in graduate school, you know, I had so much reading, I think sometimes, if I remember, it probably went over budget. So to me, it evened out over the course of time.
And it does allow for that, that it, supervisors can allow for extra hours if that's what the need is. So
why can't we look at just so much a year if it comes to money amount? Because it all, whether it's
quarters, hour amount or per term, is there such a thing as that? Or?
Well, if it was per term, that would include semester or quarter.
Or no. Trimester.
Right.
Which was referred to in here as three semesters, which is...
Right. If it was per term, you know, then that would be an option. But it still wouldn't really address the question of then does somebody in a quarter system get more than somebody in a semester system?
Well, but do the terms come out the same as far, I mean, you know, do you, are there four, how many terms are there? I'm assuming, which is probably a mistake, that there are four quarters in one term, two semesters in one term, three semesters in one term as far as
the, well, then we use the word differently.
So
I use the term.
Okay.
Why don't we just go year? Instead of term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
or maybe
per
credit?
Yeah, I think that might be better, per credit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
something that gets us out of this, you know, confusion of...
Well, if it's...
semesters or quarters or whatever.
If we're saying a normal...
school year.
A normal semester is 12 hours. And that's what we're saying we'll pay up to 64. We'd have 60 hours divided by 12.
Five.
So that'd be five even. And just say we would pay for up to 5 hours per semester. Well, that's not very much. So that
5 hours per credit hour? 5 hour reader hours per credit hour or something like that?
Oh yeah, the five is for one credit, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right, I was thinking of a class.
But then, so, again, you know, you have an equity because, like Robert is saying, there's 4.5 credit hours for each quarter.
And there's usually less work in those classes too, actually. It's kind of lighter, you know what?
But I just remember when I went to school, one class, there were 3 credit hours.
Right, so to multiply...
You'd have 15 hours of credits, or I mean of readers. Now remember, this is up to,
yeah,
and the counselor is definitely going to work with you, and if it's a course that doesn't have a lot of reading, you're not going to get 15 hours for that course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And don't forget, too, there are other sources of reading services, you know, which
mm-hmm.
is...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The school often will provide readers for... Uh-huh. Examination,
mm-hmm.
and if there's materials that are used in the course, they'll have readers put that on for that page.
Well, like you were talking about, the work study people did some or whatever, but it seems to me like we need to have something that is more universal.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, but would this do it if we had it for up to 5 hours per credit hour for reader service?
Well, but then, like Robert said, the Metro Tech's hours are
lighter.
They're not comparable to UNL hours.
Right, but this is up to 5.
Yeah.
And then the counselor would know that.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Is that acceptable?
Sure.
Let me tell you this about the drafting, is that any changes that we make in, we don't have to have motions and and votes on every change, but if we have consensus on new wording, and then at the end of our conversation here today, vote to approve this rule, then it is acceptable for that to go to hearing as the hearing draft. If there's things we don't agree upon today, then we do have to go back and redraft the working draft and meet again. So that's why I'm kind of pushing for a hearing from you all if that it does or doesn't answer this.
I think that's fine.
Point.
I would go along with it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds fine to me.
Up to 5 hours per credit hour. We might want to 5 hours of reader services per credit hour, as opposed to we'll pay up to 5 hours per semester, per credit hour for reader services. Get the reader services after 5 hours so it's more clear. Is that acceptable?
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else want coffee? I just kind of get down on the bottom. I was going to kind of let it cool up and go dump it. Does anybody else
I don't.
No. Okay.
No. Thank you. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Robert. I'll just start taking care of the stuff a little
bit. Sounds great. Okay. We've jumped into a couple of spots. I'd like to, since we're in Chapter 1, start at the beginning and kind of go through, not read through, but go through headings and see what comments you have on any. And there's a few changes that I've made that I have that I'd like to read to you, you know, specifically that were different from what you saw.
Now, once we have this hearing draft or whatever, at some point, are the I guess what I would call, you know, the singulars and plurals and stuff going to be fixed?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when does that happen?
Well,
because I don't want to approve something and say, oh, yeah, let's have this go to hearing and have some of those things in there and have to feel somewhat responsible for letting that happen. I'm just...
I mean, you can make as many comments as you want, certainly. When you get to... I mean, if it's a grammar error,
mm-hmm.
okay... then, yeah, I guess we should, that would not be substantive change. And so that you could email us and we can fix.
All right.
If it's a grammar error.
All right.
Or a tabbing. We know there's some issues with tabbing and such.
Yeah, I didn't deal with formatting kind, you know, that
yeah.
type of thing.
Okay.
But the grammar stuff. I'm partial to. That's hard for me to...
Well, I normally am too, so I don't know what you've seen, but I mean, this is a lot of work, so undoubtedly there are some things in there, and so we need all the extra brains finding those things. I agree, we don't want something to go into law that is not good language. So that we appreciate any kind of input like that.
Okay, you know, and I'm truly not being, I mean, I admire the fact that people have waded into this thing and have gotten as far with it as you have. I mean, I truly appreciate that, and I, you know, whatever I say is not intended as, you know, that I don't think people are careful or anything like that.
No.
It's the kind of thing where when you proofread your own work, you don't
yep.
find stuff.
That's exactly right, and I'm fine with that. That's fine. The point I was trying to make is that sort of thing, if it does not change the substance of what's being said, we can make that change when we get back to the office.
Okay.
We don't have to discuss it.
Okay. And because there are some sections in the 9 part of it, I think, where there are 2 C's and 2 D's or whatever, which throws off the... references to F or, you know, things
okay,
like that.
Okay, yes. Now, that is the kind of thing that we tried to kind of keep that up for a while, but then as we were kept working on it before we got it to
yeah.
people,
yeah.
we said, let's just, you know,
get
that,
it out. Yeah.
For sure that we will certainly fix at the end.
Yeah.
And all the references to at the end, we'll go back through anything that says referent to, pursuant
mm-hmm.
to, such and such.
Yeah.
We'll make
sure
see if that's still the same number.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because like on the third section of that thing, it looked like the O2 and O3 were the same thing, and so I'm assuming one of those will be dropped out and the other one
No, well, they're, O2 is fee schedules. O3 is exceptions to fee schedules. And it's important to have both. There is some repetition in the language, but...
No, both have more under 3. There was an O2 under 3 and an O3 under 3.
Right. Yeah.
So both of them in that same section. Okay, so that
003 is scope of services. 301 is program purpose. Mm-hmm. 302, fee schedules. 303, exceptions to fee schedules.
Okay, and although they are they come out the same, you have to have the separate...
Yeah, Kristen really advised to, cover what you will do and then what the exceptions are separately.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
All right. I can see why bureaucrats of the world would want to do that.
Oh, man, I'm telling you.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to Mexico next week, and I've been telling everybody at work that I am changing my vocational goal. And I'm going to be a cabana girl and serve margaritas barefoot on the sand for the next 10 years.
I'm glad to see the moving right along.
Yes.
In the 5... the 9A, where it talks specifically about people being responsible for upgrades and stuff, where that was one of the things we talked about this morning.
Yes.
And I'm glad that that's being clarified so that, and really, because that way people will have a better chance of knowing that and dealing with it. I still think we have the gray areas, and I don't know, when we were talking about the differences between policy and rule, I was thinking, does that fit better? I mean, where does that really...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and also, since we're under the Rehab Act, and it's one of those laws that requires exceptions to everything,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of hard to write succinct rule
yeah.
that allows exception to everything. But, so, I like the wording for the one you mentioned, 9A, 5-9A, is the individual will be responsible for maintenance and upgrades of equipment unless doing so imposes undue burden on the individual. So that kind of, it shows both sides.
Uh-huh.
It then leaves a lot of possibility for determining undue burden in a discriminatory way, but at least the basic requirement is in law, and if I believe that the only people that get the undue burden exemption are blondes and none of the rest of us, then I can take you all to court and say, hey, and you will have records, and you will be able to demonstrate to me that, well, that's not the case, or your records will show that, by golly, she's right. They do just pay for blondes, So I guess I think if with any of this, if you can give us better wording, that would be great. But we've really tried in all of these sections to have both, but said in a way that does help both the consumer and the commission to do its work.
Well, the justifier on that one being the use is, credible.
The thing with that, what we've done typically with the productive use, well, we haven't been consistent, but theoretically, what we've done is, if you were closed, unsuccessful, if it was a Braille watch or a cane, we didn't take it back from you, but if it was a computer or some other thing like that, we would take it back from you. And this is saying, let's don't tie it to what the feds call success, because there can be many situations for a blind client where they don't achieve that goal, that employment goal. Maybe family, health issues that cause them to just, the case is closed and they're not successful, but they've got that Braille and Speak, they're using it. we, you know, down the road, we believe it's going to help them to be more independent, and maybe then down the road have a goal that they will be able to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we use the terminology productive use. Mm-hmm. We kind of made that up, and we I did want to add a little phrase there. At which time ownership will be transferred to the individual if the equipment is being put to productive use, and I'd like to add, by the individual to whom it was issued or loaned.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen pointed out they've had clients who give it away to their mother and say, hey, she's getting really good use out of the thing.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Is there a piece of it that you do still have a problem?
No.
Okay. Okay. Any other spots you want to talk about?
I'm curious to know on the, it's talked about in the 803 or whatever, but who's on the self-employment committee right now?
Okay, the self-employment, the whole process for self-employment is something that we've had a committee for planning self-employment, not this referent, but mm-hmm. that has come up with really this whole process. And it hasn't actually been implemented in all its facets, including this self-employment committee, because it kind of came to fruition at the time that we were jumping into rule, so it made most sense to put it in rule and do whatever changing needed to be made with your discussion in the public hearing, and then really implement. So right now, nobody's on the self-employment committee, but it isn't a committee that meets regularly, but it's a committee that will identify who it is, and then when a client presents that develops a business plan, and then it explains in 8.3a, the five-member committee shall include three representatives of the commission, that is the deputy director for Voc Rehab, the business manager, and self-employment advisor. Now I said, who is that? And that was going to be a specific person, or it could vary, which Carlos?
It could vary, depending on the location, too, because we were talking about a business person from the community.
No,
not yet.
That's next. First,
this
is
would be somebody within the commission.
Within
staff.
The committee, I mean, there's five people on the committee. Three of them are commission staff. My recollection is we were identifying somebody like Candy Larson, who's a district supervisor and has done quite a bit of exploration into the self-employment process. It wouldn't be somebody we would hire that would be the self-employment advisor. But depending on where the client is, it might be the supervisor in that district, or might be Bob if they wanted to go into a certain field, or you know, something like that. Somebody within the committee that we determine is the self-employment advisor for that situation. That's how I remember it anyway. Then plus those three, there's the representative from business and a lending institution. And then it may include, this says consumer, I want to change it to blind individual who is self-employed.
And you would change it to blind individual because?
Because Kristen said, in your definitions, you don't list consumer, and this is the only place that word shows up, so what do you mean by consumer? So there's two things you can do, either add a definition for what consumer is, which would be appropriate if we referred to the thing several times, but since that little beast only appears once, I thought, let's just use specific words. We do define blind individual, you know, so.
Now, if that committee included that kind of person, would that person take the place of one of the other entities? Because it says a five-member
That's true.
Committee, and that was another one of my
mm-hmm.
questions.
That's a good question. I wasn't in on the committee that did all the planning for this part. Do you remember, Carlos, what the intent there was?
the intent was to have five all the time. And your question is again, what, Barbara?
Well, the people that are listed, it says that there will be three people from the commission staff, then there will be a person from the business community and a person from a lending institution, and there may be a consumer, a blind person. Well, that would make a sixth person unless that person knocks off one of the others.
Well, maybe that would be the representative from the business community.
Can be maybe
could be a blind person.
Yeah. So that, and I, of course, it's conceivable it could be the person from the lending institution too.
Yeah.
Right.
But because they wouldn't be self-employed. It would have to be, so actually better wording would be one representative from the business community which may be a blind individual who is self-employed. Maybe even preferably a blind individual.
Preferably, yeah.
Yeah, preferably a blind self-employed individual or something like that.
Right, okay, and...
Self-employed blind individual or however you want to put it.
And then a representative of a lending institution.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, and 8 is where all that, where the business with the, you know, the C and D and E and all that stuff get weird. But you said that you guys would fix that.
We will. I thought we had fixed them all, but we will certainly make sure. And actually, even before it would go to the hearing draft, we'll try to go through that really carefully again.
Okay. And here's where I have an apology. You know, we were talking about Social Security disability income. I thought that was in the 107 thing. It's actually in 0906 of this.
I noticed that when I was reading it earlier. I wondered if that's what
I knew
you were.
I saw somewhere, so I'm sorry. I had the wrong thing.
And did I write it correctly or incorrectly? Or did I just say the wrong thing when I said it earlier?
It's supposed to be, well, in the 107, it never did appear. I mean, they didn't explain it there, but in this document, in the 0906, it says Social Security disability income, and I think, isn't that supposed to still be insurance, the SSDI?
0906, you're right, it does say income, and it should be insurance. Thank you.
I never know, because some of these things change. Not very many when it comes to Social Security.
Right.
Once in a while.
Yeah. Well, and there's another reference that we were reading earlier where it did use the word insurance.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm glad, that's the kind of catch that I would not have caught.
The hours that she has put into this.
On the self-employment, since we're on that, one of the, let's talk about a change that, Kristen strongly recommended. Okay, it starts out 801 purpose. We said a recipient has the right to choose self-employment for the vocational goal. And then it goes on to say the commission expects self-employment can result in a successful employment outcome. Recipients making application for services leading to self-employment requiring a capital investment from the commission must develop a business plan. And then it goes on to, you know, there's the process of determining if this is the right goal for the person, etc. There's a lot to it. Well, all of this substance that follows contradicts the idea, if you just say you have a right to something, then there isn't all this other stuff. She said, get rid of the first sentence. Now, that kind of goes against the grain of how we all normally think. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I'm a consumer and I want to open a spaghetti farm in Montana and you think I won't do the, I mean, not you think I won't do the work, but we do the assessment and I'm clearly not cut out for it and I can't come up with a business plan and all these other things. And you deny, you know, you don't approve a plan for that, I will say, hey, right here, 801, it says, a recipient has the right to choose self-employment, period. So you know, all of these, the substance of this whole process, this whole section, I should say, are in there so that the person going that direction really is going the direction that's really going to be successful for them, and so the commission is putting its resources into something that's, you know, working towards success.
Well, couldn't we say, just add something like with the following, within the following framework or something?
We could, but her point is just take it out.